A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, listeners. Thug Passion Presents is a new show on Stitcher Premium hosted by stand-up comics Shalewa Sharp and Courtney Fearington.
Listen as they share their love for underrated black movies by breaking down scenes with fellow comedians and celebrating the influence these films and characters have had in molding today's culture.
Thug Passion Presents is now out on Stitcher Premium.
Go to StitcherPremium.com/ThugPassion and use the promo code BOND for a free month of Stitcher Premium.
Podcast.
Oh, that sound means it's time for another James Bonding. We like the brews here.
Yeah, except this is just sparkling water.
It's a LaCroix. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to James Bonding. I'm Matt.
And I'm Matt as well. Deep-voiced, whiskey-throated.
First time in podcast history, I have arrived at someone's house for a podcast, and they were asleep.
You were a half hour early.
No! It says, we say 10. It's look in our text messages, and you'll see that it is 10. No way. Oh my god, I was early. That's crazy, I was a half hour. I feel so bad.
Don't you feel bad?
I feel terrible.
I had a long day yesterday, so I was just catching some rest before you came over.
Do you know what's amazing, Matt, is I was driving here and I was like, boy, this is the first Sunday in a while I've actually been on time. I usually am like 10 minutes late. The fact that this is just me being silly, it had to be 10 at some point, right?
Yeah, but let's not, not us fight over that. Let's
Guys,
talk about...
I ruined it. It was 10:30. Poor Matt.
We're here to continue on the the arc of the Austin Power Series. But before we get that, let's cover a little bit of business, shall we?
Sure. I like business.
Well, first of all...
I like boss-ness.
Boss...
Me so liking this. Me so thinking. We so being friends.
Wow.
Wow, Boss Nats was here, Matt. You missed it.
Oh, I stepped out. Yeah, I was talking to Ian Fleming in the other room.
That's crazy because Boss Nats, do you think he's slimy? Do you think he's...
I can guarantee.
Yeah.
And I have that on firsthand experience.
He slimed in here.
Yeah.
It was great.
A lot of people think he's a CG creation. Nah, he's pure tactile slime. Me and Brian Blessed.
Well, he lives under the water. In what appears to be... water and airtight domes.
Yeah, jelly bubble domes.
Yeah, so I guess they're...
permeable.
Their species can
semi-permeable?
Swim for great distances.
Yeah, they're amphibious. The Gungans.
But they seem to need air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Makes me think, are they mammalian?
That's sort of what I'm thinking. They seem to live in air, but under the water.
They don't have gills, do they?
Not that I've seen.
Ta-da! That's Captain Tarples. I got all the Gungans down.
Oh, boy. So that's what we're here to talk to you about, guys.
Yeah.
Gungans.
That's right. We're starting a new podcast.
Called Opa Gungan Style. Nick Weiger was kind enough to let us use that.
It's called You Can Have My Gungan When You Pry It From My Cold Dead Hands.
Oh, look. Yeah. I think that the Gungans are the second worst race in Star Wars.
Who's the first?
The Trade Federation guys.
Oh, the Nimoidians?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Is that true?
Uh-huh. As you know, our blockaders are perfectly regal.
What? I can't believe you know their name.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I can believe it. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed and also shocked that I...
Do you know how high my midichlorian count is?
It seems to be through the roof.
It's up there.
Have you... Let me... Can you get me in touch with your mom? Because I want to ask who your father might be.
My mom carried me. gave birth to me?
Yeah, but who's your father? You're trailing off every time you answer that question. Anyway, it's time for some business, Matt.
Yeah, that's right. So we are reaching the end of our year-long foray with this podcast. We've covered all the films.
Yep.
Next week, we're going to do us all the service of covering Never Say Never again.
Which is crazy.
It feels completest.
Because
you know?
I said last time that we would never cover that again.
You did?
No, I didn't.
Oh. Never Say Never again. I didn't even get your joke set up. I apologize. And then we're going to take a little bit of a break, but don't worry. We will be back and we're discussing how we're going to come back, whether that's in the same form or possibly a Patreon angle. We're thinking of some new ideas for shows that we might want to do on a semi-regular basis that might work well on a Patreon model. So,
look, the point is we've promised you guys Star Warsing and Indiana Jonesing, and we're going to deliver that in some form.
As well as some other new ideas, possibly, and the options of the commentary track. So there's definitely going to be some James Bonding in the future. It will be regular James Bonding. Exactly when and exactly how much, we don't know yet, but we're working that out. And especially if we take a nice break, we'll be kind of ramping up again around the time that we're starting to get a steady stream of info from Bond 25.
On-set photos, rumors, happenstance, casting. It's all coming.
Yeah, like Angelina Jolie's...
script problems.
Her script problems.
Has she been rumored?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And Helena Bonham Carter.
That one I
and
knew.
And also Sarah Paulson.
Oh,
which
hello.
I really like the idea
hello,
of that.
Sarah Paulson.
I love the idea
oh,
of that.
I really like
now,
Sarah
now, that comes
Paulson.
From our man in the East via a rumored source on Reddit. Now, so that take that with at least two grains of salt. That's two generations removed. But
yeah.
I would love some Sarah Paulson as a Bond villain.
I'd be into it, especially if she wore the Marcia Clark wig.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Daniel Craig did.
Oh, Daniel Craig in a Marcia Clark wig throughout the movie for some reason. Weird.
Yeah.
Weird that Danny Boyle would request that.
I know. It is weird.
Do you think that they'd ever cast a curly-haired Bond? Do you think that would be more of an uproar than the blonde hair?
This is interesting to take the way the world is today, and you can't really... you can't say anything bad against someone with curly hair. But I remember when they did Greatest American Hero, thinking like, I'm having trouble buying this guy as a hero because he's got curly hair.
Well,
who ironically was also up for Luke Skywalker, William Catt.
Yes, I do know that.
And I don't think I could have dealt with that.
The follow-up to that is like, I think that was sort of really worked for the character though, because... he was sort of an anti-hero.
Now,
he didn't really know what he was doing.
Let me
with that
be
suit.
Clear. I actually really like curly hair.
He lost the instruction book.
I know. I wish I had curly hair. I've just got.
Do you really?
Well, wavy hair at least.
You have wonderful hair, man.
No, that's not true.
I know that you just wanted to get on the subject, so I compliment your hair.
I don't.
But it's gorgeous. It's straight. It's thick. You just got it all going on.
No.
Your beard's out. Oh boy, look out, ladies!
You come on, look at that
look
beard.
Out. Well, this is too thick a beard, and I don't like it because it curls. You know, my beard's very curly. Your beard is very beardly.
No, I isn't it funny how the grass is always greener? Because I think you've got a great great beard.
When I look at your beard and I see how much gray is in it, I envy that. Do you know how badly I want a gray beard?
You'll
get
there.
I have the gray on the sides going,
but you'll get like that's an assured. Thing.
Well, hurry up already. Gosh.
Okay.
So, anyway, this is the kind of discussion you'll be getting once again after our break.
This is the thing. Part of it is we'll put in some quality control, especially if it's Patreon related.
Finally.
No, I think so, because we're talking maybe even doing a bit of character episodes where we get some Broccoli and some Fleming, maybe some Kirshner, maybe some... Alec Guinness or whatever. Also, possibly a cocktail hour episode. These might be regular things behind them.
Yeah,
the Patreon.
I think
wall.
There also might be a segment I'd like to debut called Dueling Kirshners.
Who's are you bringing in a Kirshner?
Well, you know, I was doing your Kirshner the other day, and I was saying I'm just doing Matt Gourley's.
But it's addictive, isn't it?
It's crazy.
Everybody at home, try it out.
It's a crazy.
Here, I'll guide you through it. When you go to the swamp to see Yoda, you actually. Go to the swamp to see the Goblin Man.
Dagobah.
Dagobah. And there's the little green goblin, and Luke's got to bend over to go in his hovel.
He lives in a hovel.
When I read the script, I said, George, no one's going to buy this little Green Goblin man.
No, and we were shooting The Empire Strikes Back, which, of course, was the sequel to the very popular Star Wars A New Hope. I was calling it that back then.
So and this guy, Frink Oz, comes, Frink and he opens Oz. Up this case, and he shows me this little creature.
I thought it was a violin, but it was actually like a plush toy, right? I guess it was one of his kids or something, and he had ripped the bottom of it out. And he could put his hand up the goblin toy, and it was the most uncanny thing I've ever seen. He'd make it come to life, and we said, let's put this in the movie, and now, we retooled the script.
With Jehovah as my witness, when he moved his hand, I believed that goblin was saying things.
Then, of course, the Rolling Stones came by, and everyone was high.
It's a miracle.
Well, I've got to run. I've got a meeting with Boss Nass later. He's my boss.
You're in talks too.
I work with him.
Oh, I
work
see.
For him. He's my boss.
Did you get a lot of work on Naboo?
I did. I directed
the safety videos.
The Gungan Odo Gungan safety videos. Now that, of course, is the name of the Gungan world.
Sure.
Yeah. Also, I sound like Ray Romano.
It's weird that you talk about Yoda as some sort of goblin, but these Gungans, you know everything about.
Oh, well, you got to respect the Gungans. They've come a long way, I want to be one. I want to go dances with wolves into the Gung. Now, here's my next film, right? I mean, uh-huh. John Barry did uh-huh. the score to Dances with Wolves. I'm going to do a film called Dances with, what are those little things the Gungans ride? Hold on.
Couldn't you just call Boss Nass and ask this? But it sounds to me a lot like you want to reverse Ariel this. You want to be where the Gungans are, not where the people are.
I want to be where the Gungans are. A Kadu. Dances with Kadus. All right? So I go John Dunbar into Odo Gunga, and they capture me at first, but then I become one of them. And I marry this nice Gungan gal. Her name's Chloror. And then I fight the evil Gungans.
Yeah, how much time do you think you're going to spend on the surface?
I'm never coming up for air again.
You're just going to use the air.
What do I want with the Naboo?
Yeah. And my question, I guess, next question is the creatures that you ride again.
Kadu.
The Kadu.
They're Kadu.
How do they get up to the surface, the Kadu? Are the Kadu, do they live on the surface? Do they live in the Gungan city?
Well, that's part of what this movie's going to be about. Getting to the bottom of that. Do they have an aqualung? How do they do it?
Do they go into some sort of large transport
That's a very good
jellyfish
question.
Situation?
Because they are riding them down in Odo Gunga because Captain Topples comes up and goes, Jaja!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just like Andy Garcia in Godfather 3 when he goes, Zaza!
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Coppola, Lucas, of course, they started with American Zoetrope, and they're big on recurring themes and the poetry of rhyming themes and mm-hmm. such. So mm-hmm. they crossbred. If you really watch Godfather 3 and The Phantom Menace together, they're a companion piece. And that's on purpose, and I made sure that happened. Well, I've got to run.
All right, Irving, thanks so much for swinging through.
You betcha, 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 one way or another. I'm going to get you. What'd I miss?
There's a lot of, let's just say Irving Kirshner was here. He loves the Gungans, wants to marry one day, and he liked to do a movie just about how the animals
out.
That the Gungans ride.
The Kadus?
Yeah, the Kadus, how they get from underwater city up to the surface. Just that transport.
I bet they're taken up in one of, like, they have mobile jelly wall, semi-permeable water force shields that mm-hmm. they put around the Kadu.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's Kadu like deer, like it's plural.
Yeah, plural and singular.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you miss, Matt.
Well, next
thanks for
time.
Swinging back, though.
What other business do we got before we get started with The Spy Who Shagged Me? Because we're already 15 minutes into this thing.
Hey, look, give the people more bang for their no buck.
I want to point out something that I've been listening to that I think our listeners would find also very special. And that is this great Australian podcast called The Art of the Score. And they are just beginning a
episode series on the James Bond franchise. And these guys are so good. They bust everything apart and play it along with it. They play the actual score, but they're also sitting there with pianos so they can, you know, just go like, what would this be like in a major key instead of a minor key? And they'll play a little bit of it. And it's super fascinating. They're super knowledgeable, super likable. Check it out, The Art of the Score. And only episode one of the John Barry sequence is out already. Two more coming in the next couple of weeks.
It's weird that you direct people to podcasts with people who are more talented than us, Matt.
Oh, that's every podcast, friend.
So true.
Yes.
Look, and while we're promoting things, yeah. I just want to say to everyone listening at home, how's your wall doing? Does it look like it could use something?
You're so sweet.
Well, guess what? There's a brand new printout from Matt Gourley in his Epic Stunt Show series. This is on Her Majesty's Secret Stunt Show.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Matt, I have to tell you, this print, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it is action-packed. It has everything you've come to love about the James Bond franchise, particularly in this movie. We're talking helicopters, skis, Aston Martins, Mercury Cougars. It's got everything you love from Honor Majesty's Secret Service, one of the greatest entries in the franchise. And this presupposes that United Artists teamed up with Six Flags in the late 60s to make a stunt spectacular.
Presupposes? I think it's just reporting the facts.
Oh, it does report the facts. In fact, it's copywritten 1968, all rights reserved. Yeah. On Productions. Guys, it's beautiful. It's the color scheme of blue and white. It's going to look beautiful next to the Live and Let Die poster, which is also available if you're looking for something to hang on your wall. Maybe you've just moved into a new place and you're like, boy, I'm going to make this feel lived in.
Yeah.
Well, have I got a treat for you. You can head over to mattgourley.com and you can order one of these beautiful prints and frame it. Get it up on your wall. Do it.
Matt, you're too kind.
No, I think they need to know, because the amount of work you put into this, I mean, if that's not worth the almighty dollar, I don't know what is.
It's a labor of love, and I do love it.
Yeah, look, guys, here's the kind of detail you're going to see over there. The cable car is supported on the other side by the H.
The H.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service. It's that kind of detail that Matt Gourley is known for, and here's my guarantee. You're not going to find a better James Bond stunt spectacular show poster out there.
I think you may be right. And that is not a compliment of my own.
It's no, just give it an order.
Sheer market share.
Well, look, corner of the market. That's what they say, right?
That's right.
First to market, that's the way to go.
Matt, I love you.
Yeah, right back at you, Matt.
Now let's talk about The Spy Who Loved Me.
Shag me?
No, after watching that, I'd like to watch.
Should we talk about The Spy Who Shagged Me, The Spy Who Dumped Me, or The Spy Who Loved Me?
And there's another one, too, right? The Spy Who Came In From the Cold.
I don't count that.
Okay.
That's too many words.
All right.
The Spy Who Dumped Me, I just saw the trailer for it over the weekend, last weekend, when I went to see Uncle Drew in theaters.
Wow.
I haven't seen a movie in a long time. Still haven't seen The Avengers, or Solo, or Deadpool. But guess what I did see?
Solo. You saw
Uncle Drew.
How was it?
It was exactly how you think it would be.
But the trailer for Spy Who Dumped Me.
The Spy Who Dumped Me trailer played, and I have to tell you, it's a movie I feel like I've seen. And you know what? I think Kate McKinnon's wonderful, and I think Mila Kunis is terrific, and I look forward to seeing them team up in some sort of action adventure that takes place in France.
I'm excited. Yeah, I like those people. Kate McKinnon especially, find her brilliantly funny. I'm really excited to see what they do with this.
Yeah. So buckle up, guys. It's The Spy Who Dumped Me.
But today it's The Spy Who Shagged Me. Second installment in the Austin Power franchise, which we have one more should we decide to cover it. But also, did you see that Mike Myers was teasing a possible new
look
Austin Powers movie right after our episode on the
I don't want to say Mike is a longtime listener, but he probably isn't. but I cannot chalk it up to a coincidence.
No.
I have to think that we like Phil was responsible for getting Roger Moore's Live and Let Die diary.
And we were responsible for getting Desmond Llewellyn's hands the most Googled thing in 2017.
Yes, we are also probably responsible for this renewed interest in the Austin Powers franchise.
That's right.
You're welcome, America.
It's time.
And the world.
Yeah. And, it is time, because also when we were watching it, I guess we can kind of jump into the discussion about it. I was watching it with my lovely wife, Amanda, and our two friends, Daniel and Michelle. Daniel, who's been on this show before for the Living Daylights episode. And some of the jokes, you know, it does step it up this installment. And Amanda kind of like sighed and goes, ah, it was a simpler time. And it's true, just politically, but also comedically. This was before the rise of like cringe comedy and The Office and, you know, like the like throwing out of alts in a Judd Apatow Point Grey kind of movie. So it really is very carefully planned, wacky, simple, innocent shtick. And this movie takes that to the extreme.
Here's the most shocking thing about this film. When it was done, I noticed that the runtime was an hour and 37 minutes.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I thought I was sitting for 2.5 hours.
Really? Wow.
I watched it in two sittings.
Yeah.
Mostly because my internet went out and I had to refire up the HBO Go, which I didn't do for another 2.5 hours.
Oh.
Look, the success of the first Austin Powers movie, in your brain, you think this movie made $200 million, but it didn't make that much.
The first one?
Yeah, the entire domestic run of it was less than the first weekend box office of this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's right. It was kind of a sleeper hit that paved the way for this second one.
Yeah. And this one, you can tell they have more money and they give less fucks and they are just doing their movie. Like, I forgot how they got rid of Elizabeth Hurley.
Yeah, it's interesting that they, not that they do that, that she comes back to play that part just to be dispatched.
I think you get it, you know, as a parody of the Bond franchise.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have your main hero tied down with a missus. Mm-hmm. And this sort of starts the way that Diamonds Are Forever was supposed to start, minus the secret robot situation.
Right.
But I do really like the way they did it, and I like
that she has digital numbers for eyes.
Yes. Also, I like that the eyebrows can be surprised when it's about to blow up.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the Basil's line of, yes, we knew all along, I'm afraid. just to dispense with the character. Right. Really, that was for me a good bit.
Yeah.
And then we're back in the well. And what does that well contain? It contains ways to be naked and cover that up.
That's right. So they double down on a lot of the same jokes, as Brian pointed out when we did the first episode, and it doesn't serve it as well, because also I found a lot of just Mike Myers's kind of comedic bits were really distilled down to the same sort of thing, and that is say something funny, then repeat it a different way multiple times, and then end on a like snap mug to the camera. And I was surprised at how much that repeated throughout the movie, where he would do like a punctuating look.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think it worked more in the Austin Powers character than it did in the Dr. Evil character.
Yeah, he really...
Austin Powers wig. Well, I guess that's probably his hair.
I think it is.
You know it is.
For the most part, I think.
There's something about the Austin Powers look and that character's sort of the way that character carries himself that makes the throwaway fourth wall looks, for me, they hit better.
Because he's also doing that in the world. It's not necessarily to the movie audience. It's he's mugging to the other characters.
Yes. And also,
so that
I like,
does work a bit more.
I like that he reacts to lines of dialogue other characters are saying.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of like, you know, you say this is pre-office, but I think this is your proto Bilbo. God, I forgot his name already.
Proto Bilbo? What?
Who plays Bilbo Baggins in The Hobbit?
Ian Holm?
No.
You mean Frodo Baggins?
Is that what I mean? No.
I don't know.
Young Bilbo in The Hobbit.
Oh.
Martin Freeman. That's why, yes. So he's proto Martin Freeman in my mind.
Holm. Okay, yeah.
He's proto Martin Freeman, Jim from The Office, American version, the looks to camera reacting to craziness around him.
See, I saw it all as much more like 50s comedy. There were times when it was just straight up innocent, wacky, dumb jokes that I felt like weren't even around that much in the 80s that were just kind of like, you know, fart jokes. They're just a lot of little boy humor that also then after it does, it kind of looks at the camera and go, oh, aren't I precocious? You know?
I'm not gonna ding it for any of that. That sort of thing for me really plays to my simpler, funny.
Well, that was what was interesting about watching it is you don't see this style as much anymore. It's also 100% committed and 100% rehearsed and planned. Like it's might as well be a play in a way, like a broad farce or something.
I'd be very interested to read the screenplay.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any improv other than maybe alternate takes. But,
yeah.
But I even think those feel like they might have been planned.
This movie in many ways is way more 90s than
the other one.
The irony being this one takes place in the 60s for the most part.
Yeah.
But this is so everything you're seeing in this movie, it just sort of like goes like, oh my God, I forgot that the sort of... I forgot the omnipresence of Jerry Springer. Like, I forgot about
that. That scene really worked well, I thought. I remember at the time feeling like, oh, this is kind of hacked. But I really enjoyed that scene because they literally shot it with Jerry Springer on the studios, just like Jerry Springer.
Yeah, they went to Chicago and made that scene happen.
That for me, was a highlight of the movie.
Do you think that it had to be Jay Roach in the booth? Doing the multi-cam recording for the TV, because they record with the TV cameras.
I'm sure they shot it like a film, like one.
Oh, I think they just used their cameras.
Really? And actually
did
a switchboard?
I don't know.
Well, they can shoot everything from every angle and then edit it after, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I wonder if it'd be really funny if they were doing live.
I know.
Although I guess he'd have to reposition the camera. But that scene, for me, was just like so 90s. It was amazing.
Oh, very. Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah. And the way that... what was a little unsettling about it was the Nazi, the Klansman, and the seemingly redneck gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, no. That's very now.
Yeah. Very now. Like... Back then, those things were a little more buried, and so you could joke about them a little bit more. And now it feels a little too close to the bone.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, Steve Wilkos is in there, a.k.a. Jerry Springer's bald bodyguard.
Oh, wow. You really know your...
I know my Springer. I know my Jerry. Michael McDonald returns, having previously been rolled over by a steamroller.
He's
back, watching Jerry Springer.
A different character, as is Will Ferrell.
Yep, Will Ferrell plays the same character.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Mustafa. Why do I know this? Because we just watched the movies. That's why. But yeah, so the premise here is that Austin's mojo has been taken. They introduced the concept of time travel, which is so silly and terrific.
And the way they dispatch with the problems of it by winking
that
at the audience
was an improvised line.
Who, Michael York's?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
God bless him.
By Michael York. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty good.
And then to let go with it, and then to have...
Tybalt. He was Tybalt.
Yes.
In the classic Zeffirelli, Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, I thought something was leaking, and it turns out Amanda's just watering some plants.
Yeah. His career is interesting, because he started off pretty strongly with, you know, doing... Royal Shakespeare, but Romeo and Juliet, and then he kind of had this resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
He was, but then he really, like, I wonder what happened to Michael York, because he ended up doing a lot of low budget Christian doomsday films, the kind that just get you a paycheck, like Eric Roberts does now. And
yeah, I wonder if he was like, you know what, this is an easy life. Do these.
I wonder.
Doesn't
but
take much.
He's a talented
they
guy.
Only want
like
one take.
He could be an A-list actor, I would think. I wonder why that doesn't happen for someone like him. Is it something behind the scenes? Is it just circumstance? Is it him not caring, making bad choices, having a bad agent? I'm always fascinated by
that. Did you
that
work
sort
with Michael
thing.
York? Do you know the answer to this question? Please email us.
Please. I would love to know.
Honestly, that'd be amazing. Yeah. JamesBondingPod at gmail.com.
because he also he popped up in Austin Powers, but then that's kind of it. He never really stuck around again. That's after that is when he started doing his. I think isn't he in one of the, what is that, The Last Days or what is that series of books that they turned into movies?
Left Behind. Thinking of he in that? Is he something? In one of the Left Behinds? That's
he's in one of something like that. You know,
I'm gonna look it up, Matt. Michael okay. York. Let's hit up his wonderful IMDb here.
Yeah,
and talk about it. What's he up to right now?
What is he up to right now?
All right, here about we go.
5'11".
Most known for Logan's Run.
Yeah,
and Austin Powers.
Yeah, but not Romeo and Juliet. Interesting.
He plays a priest in something called In Search of Steven Spielberg.
What?
He does, let's see. You know, he appeared on a How I Met Your Mother. He does one voice in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh.
This might interest you, Matt. He plays Dr. Nuvo Vindi in Star Wars The Clone Wars. 2 episodes.
Wow.
Ben 10. A lot of voice acting.
Yeah, sounds like it. That's good. I mean, he's got a good voice.
Great voice. He was in A Criminal Intent in 2006. Yeah, what has Michael York been up to? Michael, if you would like a better career, consult Matt and I, and we will become your new agents.
Oh, man. I'm just going to have you come over and talk to me. You know, one bit that is new in this movie that isn't in the first that I think is excellent, and that is the tracking the rocket montage cut right before it seems like a dirty word into the next scene. But all of them are people recognizing the rocket, and then it comes full circle back to Clint Howard. I think that sequence is in a like slow key genius. I really do. Then the problem is they do it again in the same movie and it's not as effective.
Well, you know what happened there? It tested, that sequence tested so well that they went and did the second part.
That is the fault of this movie, is that it doesn't know when to quit, both in dialogue sometimes, scenes, and it's kind of working against itself at times. With there is a slight desperation sometimes to just the script and the performance in needing laughs that I think the first movie proves you don't have to do, and this one, for some reason, seems like it's doubling down on the same bits but needing a reaction more, and it's a weird like undertone that I sort of felt. I don't know, what do you think about that?
I think that it does have its faults, and it is interesting how zeitgeist the Austin Powers became between these two movies, and how
how
prolific, yeah, baby.
Yeah, and it was like it was aware when it was doing those things that it was going to get a like almost a echo in the theater. You know, people saying it, and it seems very self aware of its own cultural cachet. I guess I don't know.
I just memory flooded into my brain of when I went to see this in the theater, and the lights went out, and I'm trying to remember if it was that the trailers stopped and then somehow broke, right? And then the lights went up and it was about 5 minutes. And then the lights went down and then the movie started. And then in a dead silent theater, one guy yelled out, "Yeah, baby." And the audience started cracking up.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And it was I laughed. But that's funny. That's a memory that I had completely forgotten until just now.
There's another thing we were talking about when we were watching it, that catchphrase comedy went away after this. This was kind of like this Napoleon Dynamite. And I would say Borat is the last of that.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is we in the Goldbergs writer's room, we were sitting around because like last year we were talking, we just started doing, you know, my wife. As in the way Ackerman and the Comedy Bang Bang, you just sort of like it was so prolific, it was so unfunny that to do it ironically now is funny to you, and it was funny to us. So we started doing that. The year before we had done Yeah Baby, and this year we have switched it to Robin Williams' Hello from Mrs. Doubtfire.
Is that
hello? Yeah. So like we'll do, if someone enters the room, says hi, we'll do that. So, but there was a long discussion about like what will this year's thing be?
Uh-huh.
What is the catchphrase comedy thing that we feel like bringing back into this office for no reason other than to entertain ourselves?
Yeah,
and we had entertained going back to the Austin Powers well and saying like evil, like Dr. Evil, a couple other things, and then we landed on Mrs. Doubtfire.
That's pretty good.
That is correct, though. The catchphrase comedy. It's a weird thing where it just...
But the
meme culture, I think, has taken over catchphrase comedy.
You're right. It's the same idea.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I would say like Napoleon Dynamite and Borat, they didn't mean to be catchphrases. They were given that after the fact. Austin Powers feels almost like it's shooting for that, and not just...
Well, it's coming out of the SNL culture, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming out of Mike Myers' background on SNL.
He repeats a lot of things, and I think he's kind of aware that they have the ability to catch on, where the other films, I feel like it's just dialogue written well and delivered well, and it caught on. But I do think Mike Myers is building them in a little bit.
Well, it's the swing of it all.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's the swing, it's the as if, it's all of the catchphrases we came to know and love from Wayne's World.
Yeah, that's right.
Which again started on SNL,
yeah,
and then sort of wound up permeating the culture. He did Wayne's World. He did Wayne's World 2. Wayne's World, I think, is just it's still holds up. It's a great, great movie.
I haven't seen that in years.
And Wayne's World 2, I think, is sort of underrated.
I don't remember Wayne's World 2 at all.
God. Christopher Walken is in it as sleazy record producer.
No memory of it.
I was gonna start describing more to you.
No,
but like,
don't even
you
bother.
Know, the roadies at Wayne Stock are like, it's like Chris Farley, Bob Odenkirk. It's just like there's a lot of like funny bits in there.
Yeah, I'd revisit those.
But yeah, so it's interesting to see the Mike Myers school of comedy, and then, you know, I think with Love Guru kind of made him go, all right, let me just take a beat.
Yeah, that did not hit. He was doing his thing in a world that had changed. And in that sense, I root for it, you know? I'd be curious to watch it. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. Also, but like this character, this Love Guru character, seems like a character that very naturally would have fit into the Austin Powers world. Of like Austin going through a Maharishi phase.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I just wonder why he didn't just do an Austin Powers 4 then.
It should have been that's what like Austin Powers has become, a love guru, you know, living in India. I mean, it would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, he has the Kama Sutra in this book.
Yeah,
Austin
that's right.
Powers
with
Kama
his
Sutra.
Face on it. Yeah.
Well, it says Austin Powers Kama Sutra. It's a bestseller. So this movie introduces Mini-Me.
Yes, that's right.
Which, again, another like cultural thing.
And it's interesting to see, like, this movie does not do well for little people, lesbians, and fat people. Like, you just...
Look, every word of Fat Bastard's speech at the end rang so true to my own, how I am.
Yeah.
But I thought it was funny.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of it's funny.
I laughed. I started laughing, and then when he farted, I then laughed harder because
that was so stupid. I was just like, God, man, that to me is a perfect example of leave well enough alone. But there's always a little punctuation on these things that to me kills what they just did.
If you've ever wanted to test your competitive chops on a game show, you should be listening to Dr. Game Show right here on Earwolf.
In each episode, hosts Joe Firestone and Manolo Moreno play listener-created games with comedian guests and live call-ins.
The games are hilarious, creative, and totally unpredictable.
It's a show the whole family can enjoy. In fact, some of the game creators and players are kids, and you never know what crazy rules they'll come up with or what they'll say next.
Plus, some of your favorite Earwolf hosts have been calling in by surprise, like, oh, I don't know, me?
Oh my God, you and Lauren Lapkus? What a treat!
And Zach Reno, and Tawny Newsom, and Michael Ian Black.
Dr. Game Show has also had Earwolf host a studio guest like Chris Gethard or Gilbert Gottfried or, you know, the guys from Hello from the Magic Tavern.
And if you want to be on the show, you could submit your game show ideas to drgameshow@gmail.com and follow Dr. Game Show on Facebook and Twitter to know when you can play along live.
You know, I write them daily, pitching them Jeopardy. You can check out new episodes of Dr. Game Show every Wednesday, wherever you listen. They have yet to return my email. I don't know. I like it too. I like sweet Austin Powers. You know, like I like him. Like the character is very sweet.
Yes, he is. He's very endearing.
The cat, like, and I honestly could have done with 12 more minutes of there being two Austins talking about how attracted they were to the other Austin.
Yeah, that was good.
Like that was so funny to me for some reason. I mean, Mike Myers, I think, is super talented, very funny. And when he's playing the same character against himself, a character that is just a sexed up character who doesn't care who or what, as long as he finds them sexy.
Yes.
To find himself so sexy.
I know. I know.
I just think that's such a wonderful character trait and such a terrific sort of way to explore that. Austin from 10 minutes from now. I really like the third act of the movie. I find the second act to be a little like, okay. But the third act of this movie, everything on Moonbase Zappa is really just, that stuff all hits for me.
It's interesting to talk about it in the same way we do the Bond films, in that they're a product of their time, and so there are problematic things with Bond, no doubt. And this movie does have some problematic things, like just the depiction of Frau Farbissina's lesbian lover as a unibrowed, almost like just like butch thug to the comedic extreme.
With no lines.
But that's more problematic than anything of the era in the Bond movies of this time.
Yeah, I mean, it is stereotypical in the sense of like when they go to the Chinese school to say Wang, you're in a like Chinese private school from, I guess, from the 60s, and they're all in the same school uniform. So I'm like,
but private
I'm like,
school, it's a communist school. But
you're right.
Okay, so that is what it is, but that probably just...
That is what it is, and that's...
That's not making a... They weren't making a joke out of them being Chinese, where the joke was she looks
like a... They
just
needed to say Wang in some way. Do you know what I mean? Like, they needed to get away with saying Wang somehow.
Yeah.
And that's how they did it. So I guess, and weirdly, I guess I'm sort of defending the joke of unibrow LPGA in the sense of like it's broad, super broad, and super stereotypical.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's just the world of this movie.
It is, and that's clear, but it is something that you can't...
I think this is actually one of those things, socially justice-wise,
that I agree with. I think... aside from it being offensive, it's too easy.
It's lazy.
Yeah, it's super lazy. And those type of jokes have always... I think it's like the same thing as fat bastard farting at the end. It's like, well, I'm not sure if we're going to get him with what we just did, so let's throw something in for everyone.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about lazy jokes that I don't know that you can do anymore. It's just like them all, like them shaking, thinking there's an earthquake or the volcano's going to blow up, and it's just that fat bastard has walked in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, there's like, there's a lot of them. And it's, I think this movie, I forgive it because it sort of spreads it so far, you know, across all, every genre of person is mocked.
Yeah.
To the nth degree in this. Like, you know, from the swingers of the 60s to the fat guy to the, to the
lesbian and the little people
thing. And I forgot about the retconning of making Scott Frau and Dr. Evil's kid.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that too. I just find it's interesting to talk about that stuff because I'm not judging it one way or the other. It is an old movie. And I don't think even a new Austin Powers would do that. It's 22 years old, isn't it? Wasn't it 96? No,
I don't know.
Oh, no. What am I saying? Not 96. Yeah, you're right. It's 99. So, yeah, it's 19 years old. Jeez.
It's crazy to think about how old that is. There's a lot of people. There might be people listening to this podcast that weren't alive when that came out.
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
I know.
But you look at sort of the if you take it I think its sum is greater than its parts in this movie, or
yeah,
is that reverse? Its parts are greater than what it ends up being.
Like its individual.
And the fact
parts.
That there are more good moments in it than there, than overarching. I don't know what I'm saying.
You're saying
I like some of it, but I think the whole movie as a whole isn't as good as the first one.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's sort of what I'm saying, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's a little too self-aware of its own, well, its own mojo, really. And in, it is doing that comedically, but also it really is doing that. And that's when I can feel it and it doesn't quite work for me.
Well, here's sort of the other angle I was watching it with. I was looking at it like, this is a super successful movie, a super successful franchise that... guys, Amanda's trying to clean up in the backyard. And
do you need help? Oh, no. Do you need help?
Oh, no, no, no.
She doesn't need help.
It's just James Bond Sunday morning.
There's a red tub full of drinks from Matt. Has these wonderful screenings in the summer. Last night they screened the movie Fear, starring Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon. And Amanda's out there trying to just clean up the any of the empty bottles that were left outside from various beverages. And Matt rightly was like, oh, does she need help? But the reality of it is she can do it herself and doesn't need our help. But just was making hilarious noises.
Yeah.
It was a very funny noise.
Yeah.
Just the idea of all these. I also was very confused as to, like, is she just dumping out a bunch of glass bottles?
Well, that's what she has this big red tub, and she was dumping the water to water the tree, but all the bottles came thinking. I was like, what is she lining the tree with bottles? What is she doing?
I like that when people cement bottles into things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
They used to make bottle houses.
That's an aesthetic we don't. That's an aesthetic we don't have anymore.
I might bring it back.
Should we bring it back around that tree?
Let's do it.
Build up a little wall that has like
little seat.
Green Heineken bottles. Speaking of Heineken, the product placement in this movie is interesting. It's so perhaps the most James Bond thing about this movie is that there is so much product placement. I also like the nonsensical time travel of it all. The fact that Elvis Costello and Woody Harrelson are in 1969 looking as they do in 1999.
And Burt Bacharach.
I like the idea that someone wanted Woody Harrelson's autographed in 1969.
Wow, I never put that together.
I'm lost as to where we were.
Well, you're talking about Heineken, and I think one of the other things that's very Bond about it, too, we don't talk about it enough, is the George Clinton score. It's incredible. It's really good. In fact, on that podcast, The Art of the Score, when they get to You Only Live Twice, I think, they talk about how these like counterpoint of these triplets in the melody with the under music, which isn't really in triplets. There's just this conflict. They explain it a million times better, obviously. But then I think they play a segment of Austin Powers that is mimicking that same music, but it's not doing that. That
is the Austin Powers Quincy Jones theme.
It's George
specifically
Clinton.
For this movie,
isn't it? George Clinton,
isn't it conducted by?
Oh, the ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. That's something that I've like. Is this new or has it always been here? And that's the genius of it. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Like, is it composed for this movie or did they pull it from some Quincy Jones composition? I don't know.
That's like, remember, you know that song More Than a Feeling by Boston?
Yes.
They played that a ton on the radio in the 90s, and I thought that was a new song by a 90s glam band.
Do you know that Boston, that was not a real band?
Yeah.
He just did it all
guy.
In his basement?
Yeah.
And then he had to find a band to tour with?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But then he died, didn't he?
I don't know. Did he?
I think so.
Are you telling me you killed him?
I know. I did not.
Matt,
say
did
that.
You just admit to that on the radio?
No.
Is this a radio?
I did not.
I'm looking up the Austin Powers theme. I just want to get more. Here we go. Oh God, Soul Bossa Nova, right?
Mm-hmm.
Released in 1962.
Oh wow. Okay.
Written by Quincy Jones.
Oh.
Performed by Quincy Jones. Produced by Quincy Jones. Right.
Got it.
He took 20 minutes to compose the piece. Piece primarily features Kuicha, responsible for the distinctive laughing sounds in the first bar.
Mm. I always thought that was like a muted trumpet.
So the first time this appears on a soundtrack is in Sidney Lumet's The Pawnbroker, which was also scored by Jones. Canadian Mike Myers grew up watching Definition, which is the long-running Canadian television game show that also used this score. Homage to his childhood, he used the title as the theme for the Austin Powers series. So there you go, everybody.
Yeah, and then it was like a, wasn't it a radio hit again or something because of Austin Powers? Or
listen, everything's a radio hit. This got Madonna's Beautiful Stranger to chart.
That's right.
This album was number 5 in America.
How is that used in this movie again?
It's when he's at his lowest. It's at the end. It's in the middle of the second act when he's driving alone in his Shaguar.
Yeah, see, now that's part of the thing. It's like that breaks convention of the movie in a way I don't care for, where it's just like, we can get a Madonna song, let's do it. And it has nothing to do with the time.
Oh, the time of the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it does have, you know, it does work for the moment in the story.
But imagine if they took like...
It's right after he runs off from Heather Graham.
Yeah. Yeah,
when he can't have sex with her because his mojo's
gone. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
but
his,
like, imagine
his
if they put
point.
In a sad 60s saddest, song. That would be so great.
His saddest point is erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
That's, which is so great for that character.
Yeah.
Of course it would be.
Yeah. Yes. That's good.
Of course it would be. So Felicity Shagwell shows up. Heather Graham. I was reading that on... Where was I reading this? But I was reading that Heather Graham was just about to take a role in a softcore porn because her movie, like, she hadn't been getting a lot of...
This is pre-Boogie Nights?
Movie roles. I don't know the years of this. Maybe it was post-Boogie Nights. I mean, she is just Roller Girl in that. It's not a huge part.
But it was a breakout role for her. She...
Well, this was really her breakout, according to the things I was reading about this film. But Boogie Nights, I feel like, came out in 97. Am I crazy?
I can't remember if it was 97 or 99.
I'm gonna look it up. Maybe it was after it. It was 97. Yeah, so it was pretty much, she'd gone 2 years without sort of really getting anything, and she was about to take a role in a softcore pornography, you know, one of these Cinemax, one of these Skinemax films.
Sure, sure.
Tasteful.
Mm-hmm.
When she auditioned for this and got the part. And the first thing she did, she said, in this thing I was reading, the first thing she did with the money was buy a copy of this softcore porn that she had almost ended up in for her career.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
I thought it was a fascinating tale. I hope that's true and not just some crazy thing someone wrote.
It's funny, too, because like, I was thinking in Goldmember, Beyonce is the main character, and That when was that movie?
When was
Goldmember?
Goldmember was 2003 or 5.
Yeah, so I didn't realize like Beyonce had been in the zeitgeist that long. Actually, that was her breakout role
I mean, she doesn't really do much acting.
No, I know,
because she realized that she's a music superstar. Why bother Goldmember came out in 2002.
Wow, so yeah, 16 years ago.
Crazy.
Yeah, man. So then how did you like Heather Graham in this film?
I thought she was great.
Yeah,
I thought she was like, I think she's very talented. She's in Lost in Space too. I don't, that story that I read, I'm like, this doesn't make a ton of sense to me, because she's in Lost in Space, she's in Boogie Nights, she's in this. I feel like it wasn't getting to that point for her.
Well, maybe maybe Boogie Nights. So was it between Boogie Nights and this where she hadn't worked and was going to take a softcore porn?
Again, I read this story. I don't know how true it is, but that would have been between 97 and 99, yeah.
I like the girl who plays Ivana Hump a lot. I forget her name. She's Groundlings in the like Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's really funny.
Kristen Johnston.
Is that her? Was she in Third Rock from the Sun? Okay.
She was in Third Rock from the Sun, and then she was in the TV Land sitcom that like was her, Donald Faison,
Oh.
Wayne Knight and like Michael Richards, I think.
Oh, wow.
Or not Michael Richards. But it was like a...
What happened to her? I always wondered why she and like Michael McDonald?
Yeah.
He was the star of Mad TV. Like, why didn't they go on to have bigger careers?
Some of it I wonder if they wanted to.
Yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people take for granted, that everybody just wants to and they either can or they can't. But there's got to be some people that make a comfortable living and go, okay, I'm done. I feel like I would be that way.
Oh, I agree with that, totally.
But then when do you ever feel like you're making a comfortable living? It's all relative.
The TV Land sitcom was called The X's, and it was Donald Faison, Wayne Knight, Kelly Stables, David Allen Boucher, not David Allen Boucher, right? No, David Allen Bash, and Kristen Johnson. And that ran for 4 seasons and 64 episodes on TV Land.
Wow. Okay, there you go.
There you go. Yes, Third Rock from the Sun's Chris. And then there is... So, I like that he gets to his swinging pad and there's a crazy party going.
Yeah, that's still funny. Oh, I love that he travels through time in that bug, Volkswagen but then bug. Just appears in the living room driving that car. That was hilarious. and I think, like, I feel like they could have stopped and pointed that out. In fact, that's kind of what this movie does too much, and they didn't, and that's why that one really works for me.
Yeah, I think that the crazier the thing is, it feels like they don't... I feel like the crazier the move is, they are less likely to point it out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The late, great Vern Troyer as Mini-Me.
Yeah.
Does some very funny stuff in this movie.
It is funny, and I had forgotten his origin. And it's just simply like, we cloned this as a gift for you, but it's basically like...
No, it was they cloned it. They wanted to clone him.
Yeah, right. But it was so... I mean, it was so clear to me that as he's writing this movie, probably Mike Myers, they're like, let's get a little guy in here. How are we going to make that make sense? Let's do the least amount of work possible. Just say we cloned it. Like, the whole thing is a very,
I don't know,
forced way to do basically, quote, midget comedy.
He has
a
tiny Bigglesworth.
Yeah.
He has his own Bigglesworth.
But notice they couldn't find one.
That small?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of his, like, when he runs up on the table to hit the button on Scott Evil is very funny to me.
Yeah.
Also, the...
the fight scene.
When he's hanging from the rafter of the moon base and they get the hook. That's funny to me. I'm sorry, but yeah, that made me laugh.
It's tough.
Get the hook. The fight scene, that's again sweet Austin Powers, right? When he's getting Mini-Me out of the airlock. First of all, he says mercy, and he's on the ground, and he's so sad, and he's hurt, and he's like, peace. Like that, that Austin Powers to me, I really am delighted by that. And then when he lets him out the airlock, and he's just spinning away, and he's just so sad about it, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was a fun watch.
What'd you think of the I Am Your Father joke? And again, you get genuine Austin going, really? Yeah.
I don't remember that one registering that much with me, but I thought Tim Robbins was really funny as the president.
Yes.
When they all start cracking
up. Generic Nixon? Like, yeah. It would have been Nixon.
Yeah. 69? No, it would have been... did you say Nixon?
Wouldn't it have been Nixon?
Oh, I thought you said it would have been Kennedy for some reason. Boy.
Am I crazy?
Yeah, Nixon. I don't think they were even trying to make him.
It was moon landing Nixon, and he was acting more like he looked like a Kennedy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really liked him also in that role.
Mm-hmm.
I love when they laugh at him about $100 billion.
Yeah.
So that the money doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
I like that the evil lair has a direct video line to the president.
Yeah. Oh, something I noticed too. You can call this a gloft if you'd like. That the lair from the inside, when you're looking at the two big eyes, one has a drooped eyelid, just like Dr. Evil. It was really funny.
I did not notice that. That's a great detail. Yeah. I love that we're getting gloffs even on Austin Powers movies.
I aim to please.
This is amazing, Matt. Yeah. The other thing I really enjoyed about this movie was the Burt Bacharach Elvis Costello performance.
Yeah,
that was really nice. Loved that. I have that on my in my music library still. That performance.
Yeah,
I love Elvis Costello. Mm. So glad that that crazy form of cancer he got was just treatable.
I just saw that something happened with him. So he got diagnosed with cancer.
He had a crazy thingamajiggy. The doctors caught it in time. And it seems like he's going to be okay. And the doctor told him to go play the lottery because he's very lucky.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. Oh, that's good news.
Yeah. It's bad news, good news.
That's right.
Bad news, horrible form of aggressive cancer. Good news, you're going to be okay.
Oof. Yikes.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember the other set pieces. What did you think of the opening dance sequence? Naked Mike Myers running around.
Well, I like it in the same way that in the first movie, it's kind of like a Richard Lester Hard Day's Night, fun thing. Like, I don't even care if those ever get derivative or whatever. They are pure fun. Like,
yes,
he's not doing jokes necessarily. Some of the naked stuff was some jokes, but it's just kind of fun to watch that.
Well, it's like you know, he's watching the rabbi and the moyle cut the shank, like it's being circumcised.
Yeah.
And they say L'chaim.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I also think that watching people who have done a successful movie do a second movie with more money and less studio interference is interesting.
Yeah. And I wonder if the studio interference
helped or hurt.
Yeah. And same with the money.
Yeah.
But I think even more than those two things, it's the awareness of how this thing has been received, and whether it's conscious or unconscious, trying to serve those expectations. That is probably one of the hardest things comedically to do, is to follow something up successfully.
Yeah, I wonder what the budget was for the second Powers versus the first Powers.
Yeah.
I find it... Did you like the acknowledgement of London looking like Southern California?
Yes, because that comes halfway through the movie, but they're also there early in the movie, and the first thing I said was like, oh, Los Angeles, are we going to the Bat Cave?
I also like when you're at London's swinging pad, it pans down, you can just clearly see the Hollywood Hills behind it.
Yeah. Have there been any, because you've got, you know, sequels are notoriously difficult to deliver better than the original, but they always say, you know, Godfather 2, Empire Strikes Back. Comedically,
has there ever been a sequel that was better than the original? That's an interesting question.
I can't think.
And it's also a question that sort of like, lately I've been like thinking about drama television writing versus comedy television writing, and how much I envy drama rooms and people that write drama, because they're not in there for hours trying to beat the joke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You must lose sight of it. Yeah.
You're left with sort of like, it doesn't take as long to go, is this the most dramatic thing we can do in this moment? Is this the best way to end this act?
Yeah.
Whereas like in a comedy room, you're sitting there and you're going like, is this the funniest scene blow we can come up with?
Scene blow?
Yeah. Like when you're ending a, like a button.
Okay.
Like a button on a scene.
Scene blow. That's funny.
Yeah. you're sitting there for so long trying to alt the jokes. Like we spend days that are just alt days where we're just trying to pound out as many jokes as we can for, you know, it could be like two or three jokes on a page that need to be alted.
Wow.
To sort of find the funniest version. Which is why it's like such an honor when you have your script and you end up shooting jokes that you wrote in the first draft.
Even if it's just a few.
Yeah, even if it's like three. It's like, okay.
Wow.
But yeah, I guess my point to that is it's hard with comedy to escalate to a point that when you see this thing the first time, giving it to them again, when you're like, you have to do this delicate dance of like, okay, people liked this.
Right.
Let's give them this. How do we plus this? How do we make this funnier.
Yeah, and that's why this doubles down on repeating. And I'm just trying to think of any comedy other than like the Marx Brothers. Those weren't really sequels, but I think they got better as they went along. For
I like
a certain
the Day
point.
Of the Races. That's my favorite.
I like the Day of the Races too a lot. I like,
but like Duck Soup, you know, is sort of like seen as the seminal
Now, but it wasn't at the time.
Right.
It was kind of a.
But Duck Soup's early.
Relative.
It's fairly early in the run.
But it's the last of their Paramount ones. So there had been Coconuts, Animal Crackers, Monkey Business, and Horse Feathers prior to that. So it was the fifth of their films.
Yeah.
Which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, but then you go Night at the Opera, Day at the Races, The Big Store,
Night in Casablanca.
Night in Casablanca. Oh, yeah, that's the third one. Then The Big Store.
But really, Night at the Opera and Day at the Races were...
And are the same movie.
They're like the Thalberg MGM revivals.
Yes.
But then there's a big space before all those later ones come.
Yeah, but my favorite of all of them is The Day at the Races.
I like that one a lot, too. I really
it is
do.
Genuinely
and,
my favorite.
And that one's got that crazy ballerina segment in it that is mind-blowing.
Oh, and Margaret Dumont and Dr. Hackenbush are at the ballet.
Yeah. Well, they're at the, like that.
Like it's a water.
Yeah,
like
it's an outdoor.
It's an outdoor ballet synchronized swimming situation.
I don't know, but that ballerina correctly. When she does her thing, it blows me away. I love it.
Oh, it's crazy. But you're also like, that's what movies were back then.
I know.
You're like, how do we show them this? It's sort of like a taste of what the James Bond franchise is, where it's like the James Bond franchise is early enough in cinema history that you're still getting these sort of you're still getting the idea of being showing people the world outside of their own world at the movie theater.
Yeah.
Just because that was the only way to do it back then.
Yeah.
So when you watch these older films and they devote 6 minutes of silence to this ballet dancer, who was probably just this world-renowned ballet artist. Who,
it's a way for them to go to the ballet in a way they could never before.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does have... The problem with The Day at the Races is the main problem is that they have to escape in blackface.
Yeah,
they have to get out of there
and sing in like
but they're not
minstrel
in
style.
Blackface when they're singing, right?
All God's Children.
All God's Children got rhythm.
Yeah,
but that's like it's a great performance. That whole sequence.
Yeah, and that's the thing is when they get to those Thalberg years, they're really putting in. Like straight lead ingenues, and it's becoming more of a musical comedy as opposed to the Paramount ones, other than like Coconuts and
yeah,
Animal
and it's
Crackers.
Also like the Marx Brothers are there to help with the main characters of the story, quote unquote. They're not there to be the main characters, which I think in a lot of ways to have them there purely as comic relief is kind of an advantage.
Well, stick around for Marxing Brothers, which Marx Brothering. Yeah.
Stick around
movies.
For Margaret Dupod.
I would do it. She's incredible. She's so good.
Dr. Hackenbush. those of you who aren't familiar with the Marx Brothers franchise, you are familiar with the Margaret Dumont of you're familiar with the archetype of Margaret Dumont, and you don't even know it.
Those movies give me a piece in a way that like They're one of the things I can put on and just actually feel at ease.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I just love them. There's something about when they go quiet with like Harpo scenes and you just hear the white noise of the room tone. And
You ever watch any of the, ever see any of the clips of Margaret Dumont and Groucho in like the 50s on TV?
Like just talking out of character or doing stuff
like skits.
Like, yeah.
And then like, it's just fascinating. Yeah. I just love it. I love it. Anyway, we're big fans of the Marx Brothers here on this podcast.
That's right.
But we're also big fans of talking about Austin Powers.
Well, to a certain extent, which we could probably give our final thoughts on it.
Sure. Look, I think because this movie paved the way for the third one, which I remember loving.
But
and
I
it's
wonder
gonna
if
be
he still will.
It's going to be interesting. I haven't seen that movie in 15 years.
And I kept thinking parts from that one were going to show up in this one. Like, aren't Spielberg and Gwyneth Paltrow?
They're in the beginning.
Yeah.
They're in the cold open of the third one.
Yeah.
It's Tom Cruise, Danny DeVito as Dr. Evil.
That's right.
Yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow, I believe, is playing Felicity Shagwell.
Yeah.
And Spielberg is directing.
That's like,
and it starts like an action. It starts like Mission Impossible 2.
That's like Pee Wee Herman when you've got James Brolin and Morgan Fairchild playing.
Yeah, that's roles. Like the plussed version. So like it's like they did so well with the second one.
Yeah.
That they were like, here, as much as you need, and then they did the third one. And I think the third one, I mean, I would love to talk about the third one because I'm curious to watch it again with Michael Caine.
And I remember his gold member character grating my nerves because he really, really tries for that catchphrase with it's tight and, you know.
Tight like Tiger.
Yeah.
It's tight.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember it very well. I also remember him under his breath saying Bad News Bears, Walter Matthau. Like saying Walter Matthau after he said Bad News Bears really tickled me for some reason.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
And also, I'm interested now with the whole you're actually brother's storyline and how that fits into Spectre.
Right.
Which it then becomes
that
like...
That is fucking crazy. I forgot about that. That's really what they are. That is doubled back on itself.
Yes,
now,
exactly.
In a way that they probably forgot about before they ever wrote. Like, do you think when they were writing that someone went, hey, you know, they actually did this in Austin Powers, so you're beyond self-parody here?
I don't know. You know, we brought it up when we talked about Spectre, the Austin Powers of it all. But it is going to be an interesting, if we do cover the third one, it's going to be very interesting to sort of watch the snake eat its tail.
Yeah, well, we have to cover it because just even for my need for completism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I wonder if it's any good. Anyway, so this one, we ranked them again on a scale of 007 because this is James Bonding. And
I forget what I gave Austin Powers.
I have to say, well, we talked about how successful was it at what it set out to do, right? That was sort of how we graded Austin Powers.
Mm-hmm.
And for this one, how successful was it at what it set out to do? You know, I think this one is probably a 003.5.
I'd go 003.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm very curious about Goldmember.
Well, we'll do it. We've got two more regular episodes after this, but I think we've got a couple episodes that might be coming kind of irregularly because some ads are sold. So we'll get to this at some point.
Yeah, I believe James Bonding will return.
That's a fact.
With?
Never, 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 never say never again. Never, never say never again. Never say never, darling. James Bonding Podcast.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor.
Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You want to see my collection of men corpses and one woman?
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.